Well, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast. Ross Flanagan here, your co-host, sitting alongside Jamie Glazier. Well, we're back for the second episode, I guess, in this series of what we're calling Let's Talk About It. It is a new format for us, as we discussed last week. If you're joining us again, thank you very much. Jamie, we've got another guest, this time all the way from the United States, a professional golfer, which is a nice change in direction from Scott, amateur golfer from our first episode of Let's Talk About It. Jamie, welcome back. Thanks for coming back. I'm excited for this one. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Roscoe. Very well. I had some great feedback from last week's episode with Scott. I think that this new format around having a discussion with a golfer and sort of tapping into a little bit about their mental game and giving some live strategies, I think really resonated with a lot of people. And they actually got a lot out of some of those exercises and some of those conversations that we had with Scott, which was, you know, again, amazing and the reason why we really wanted to set up this new format. I think today having our guest on will help those, I think, elite amateurs that are wanting to transition into professional golf and also those professional golfers that are making that transition and those first couple of years working through their way, you know, whether it be through the mini tours or the Korn Ferry, Canadian, Latin America tours, those type of scenarios. So I think it's going to be a fantastic conversation.
Now we'll bring Peter Bradbeer, our guest, who's sitting in Florida at the moment. I'll bring him in, but just a little bit background, you know, how did you meet Peter, Jamie? You know, where did you cross paths in your world when you would do all your work overseas?
So interesting one. Peter messaged me about a year ago just to have a chat and ask a few questions and possibly set up a conversation. And then with all our travels early last year, we couldn't sort of connect. And Peter went on a little bit of a tear last year. And then I actually met Peter a couple of weeks ago in Orlando with JD, who the listeners know quite well. He's been on the podcast a couple of times. And so I didn't really know at the time, but Peter and JD were quite good friends. So we caught up and they were able to play a bit of a money game, and it was just good to see Peter play and have a chat with him. And and then when I released this new format, he reached out and said, hey, it'd be great to jump on. And so it was just really, for me, it was just perfect timing of everything coming together. And we've got Peter here ready to sort of get 2024 underway. So Peter, thanks for joining us, mate, and appreciate you coming on.
Thank you guys for having me. This is exciting for me.
Peter, thanks for me for joining. Peter, here's your opportunity. You know, I'm just jokingly off air said, you know, there's only about 10 million people listening, so it's, you know, a very safe and secure environment that we've got here. Yeah, give us a little bit of a background into the professional golf world of Peter Bradbeer.
Yeah, so I'm going on my third year here in the professional world. It's been exciting. I've gotten to travel all over the country, see lots of different places that I wouldn't have normally seen if I had taken a desk job out of college. And it's a whirlwind. I'm just, you know, grateful to have the opportunity to continue to travel this year, and we'll see what the future holds for me.
Now, in your professional playing status, you know, give us an idea of where you're playing. You know, in America, we believe, you know, in Australia, we've got like basically one tour, but there's a whole host of different tours and different opportunities for professional golfers to ply their trade in the States. For the people that are listening in Australia, give us an idea of where you play and how you earn a living out of the game.
Absolutely. So I live in South Florida, and the biggest tour down here in South Florida is called the Minor League Tour, which is I've been playing on for a couple of years now, and I've had some good wins over the past 2 years playing that tour. It's a pretty small tour. It's 1 and 2 day events mostly. But I've been able to make a good chunk of change playing that tour. And then once the season kind of starts up in end of March into April, there are two main tours in the US, mini tour wise, called the All Pro Tour and the G Pro Tour. And those two tours will be mostly where I'll be playing my golf this summer, along with a couple Monday qualifiers as well, kind of leading up into the fall into Q school. So I'll be playing a bunch of going to Louisiana at the end of March, playing two All Pro Tours there, and then mainly on the East Coast playing in Georgia, North Carolina, and Virginia playing the G Pro Tour.
And just to contextualize, you know, you mentioned a chunk of change. Now that can mean, in Australian context, you know, that can mean several million dollars, or it can mean $50. You know, just again, to put some context for the Australian listeners in that professional environment, we've got that one professional tour over here, and you know, the guys are trying to, a lot of great golfers trying to earn a living, as there is for you. Yeah, what's a chunk of change? You know, what does that look like in your terms? Yeah,
my career earnings over the last 2 years, on the minor league, I'm just north of 50,000, I think, on that tour, mainly coming from, I had one win in Central Florida for my first professional win was a 3-day event in Central Florida for 20,000, which was pretty cool to get my first win as like a real deal, you know, playing against some great players. And then, you know, including the other events, I've played some G pros and some all pros in there. So I've made around 70,000 US playing the past 2 years. So I've done well, you know, I'm still, you know, needing, you know, some financial support to kind of continue to travel as much as I do. Cause it's, you know, you have to be very successful in the minor, you know, the mini tour events to be profitable. And that's my goal. My goal is to make 2-1, you know, every time I tee it up, so that I can kind of keep the ball rolling in terms of, you know, positive energy and, you know, just feeling like I'm, you know, not donating $500 for, you know, a 2-day event in Florida.
Well, Jamie, you know, the goals are pretty clear from Peter. You know, he wants to elevate his status. He wants to win some more money so he can, you know, be profitable and keep developing his career. Where does, you know, in a mental mastery sense, you know, your turn to take over, mate. You know, how do we help?
Yeah, look, I think it's great, Roscoe. I think, you know, what Peter's talking about here is the early couple of years in his pro career. I know these mini tours really well, spending some time with the boys there over the last couple of years. And when you typically have a 3-day mini tour event that has a first prize of, say, 20K for first, that attracts a lot of really good players, you know, potentially a lot of Korn Ferry players as well who, you know, may not be playing that week. They'll go and use those 3-day events to test their skills. And so the mini tours have a lot of, you know, amazing players that, you know, then go on to Korn Ferry PGA Tour status. So it is a very competitive tour, a competitive environment. And for Peter to have won, you know, 6 or 7 events in his first couple of years is actually a really, really great thing. You know, if we look at the averages, I would probably say he's trending above average from being on track as a young, you know, professional, being in the game a couple of years as a professional. He's doing some really good things and on a great trajectory. So, Peter, I'm really keen to sort of tap into a little bit of how your mental game has been playing a part in your success, and also how you perceive your mental game is possibly been getting in the way of you being able to break through, even though it's very early days in your professional career. So can you give me a little bit of insight into, you know, specifically what you would like to target, and also some of the mental game strengths that you have and have leveraged off in those first couple of years?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I sit down at the beginning of every year and set goals for myself. You know, long-term, short-term, I try and pick a few out that I can kind of tackle, you know, if I could snap my fingers and say, could I get this done in 24 hours magically? You know, that's kind of how I pick my goals. And then I kind of walk them back from there. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, the beginning of the year, I pick out goals and I set them for myself. And this year is no different. I have specific things in mind that I've set. You know, obviously the big one is, you know, getting through Q school and, you know, getting that Korn Ferry status or that PGA Tour America status. But, you know, again, it's golf is a fickle sport, and it, you know, it can get you down very quickly. And I've noticed, you know, playing lots of Monday qualifiers over the years, and, you know, I'm 0-for-1,000,000 on Monday qualifiers. So I think that it's a big adjustment to make from, you know, high end amateur golf to the pros, where, you know, you're playing in amateur golf for that specific event. You're playing to win that event. You're not playing for your future. And in professional golf, it's completely different. You know, there's money cash games, which, you know, you're just playing that event. But when you get to that next level, that Monday qualifier, that Q school, you're playing for your future, right? You're playing for future opportunities. And I think for me, that's kind of been the little pitfall that I have not been able to kind of get myself out of in terms of kind of getting to that next level and like understanding that that's going to be, that's going to be my future if I can, you know, achieve that, you know, play that good round or, you know, play that good week. So that's what I would say.
Yeah. So how do you, if we look at the two different scenarios, a 3-day minor league tour event for 20K for first, where it's just about that week and that week only, and then you go into a Q school scenario or a Monday qualifier scenario where all of a sudden that week now means more. It's got more layers added to it in regards to future possibilities. If you were able to describe to me how those two different scenarios present differently, like did they present with more stress, anxiety, pressure in those bigger moments? Or so what presents that week that changes?
I think the one thing that I've noticed, you know, when you turn professional, you know, you have a lot of friends and family that are so excited to hear about everything that goes on in your life. And they ask you what's coming up, what events you got coming up. And when you get to the topic of Q school or a Monday qualifier, there are a myriad of follow-up questions that come from that, oh, I'm playing Q school. You know, it's like, oh, you know, well, somebody will say, oh, it's just like every other tournament, or, you know, somebody will say, you know, they'll say what they want to say. But in your mind, I find that nobody really talks about those mini tour events like they talk about Q school, you know? So those consistent conversations that happen over, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 month period, they kind of build up in your mind, you know, because you have people telling you they're watching you, or, you know, they, you know, it just gets built up in your mind as this bigger than event than it should be.
Yeah.
And then of course my reaction to that is just try and treat it like a normal mini tour event. And sometimes, you know, the brain's a powerful thing. It'll get in front of you faster than you would like.
Absolutely. And I think this is a really good conversation because, like, when you've got family, friends, anyone telling you it's just another event, I don't think it is. I actually don't think it is another event. Like, the reality is it's not like any other event, and that's okay. But when what happens is sometimes when we try to treat it like another event and we prepare really well and we feel like we're in control and we get there, and then the brain, as you say, is a powerful thing and it's also a very intelligent thing, it'll be like, no, this is not just like another event. Now all of a sudden, you know, shit hits the fan because we haven't prepared for this anxious, exciting environment. It can shock the system. So if I asked you, do you deep down really think it is like any other event, or do you actually think it is something that is more important and has more meaning?
That's what's taken me 3 years to figure out, is that it's not, you know, like that was the big realization I had, you know, first stage of Q school last year. You know, I felt I was playing some of my best golf. I had just, you know, played really well at a couple mini events leading up to the Q school. I was playing fantastic, and you know, that pressure builds up in your mind of trying to treat it like a normal event. And of course it backfires on you. And, you know, the funny part about first stage of Q school for me was I shot 76 in the first round, and then I went out and shot 65, 70, 67.
Yeah.
So it was there, right? My game was there. It was sharp. It was just my inability to kind of just like, hey, it's just another round of golf, or, you know, my inability to understand that it was going to be a tough round of golf, but I needed to just kind of get on with it and just go one shot at a time.
Yeah.
That's the big piece of, you know, that's the learning. That was what I learned from that week.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's like what you said there about it's going to be a difficult round of golf. Like, it's Q school is, it's the hardest tournament of the year, you know, just because it is going to be a mental marathon. It's going to be something that is just super difficult. We overanalyze everything in those weeks because they do mean a lot more. And, you know, I think it's about preparing yourself for that acceptance of, hey, Q School is a huge week. But it's all about, are you able to bring your focus back to the present moment? Are you able to bring your focus back to what are my competencies? Is my game sharp? What are my skills? And bring it back to that and allow those to function, you know, during those Q School type of weeks. And, you know, JD, you know, super well. And it takes me back to a conversation we had on the night of the third round a couple of years ago at the first stage of Q School, when he said, got on the phone, he said, I just don't know if I can step out there tomorrow and be the guy that I need to be to get through. And it wasn't the fact that he didn't think he could go out and shoot 69 to get through to second stage. He's like, I don't know whether I can be the guy to shoot 69 under this intense pressure situation. And, you know, we just broke it down to like, well, your game's ready. The reality is you're either going to go out there tomorrow, play well, and we're going to get back to work the next day, or you're going to go out there tomorrow and not play well and not get through, and we're going to get back to work tomorrow. But I said, come back to focusing on yourself and your competency inside the storm, because there's going to be a storm tomorrow. Like, it's Q School. There's going to be a storm. You just need to be able to control your focus and lean on your competencies during that storm. And then he had what he said was probably the hardest round of golf he's ever had to play in his life. You know, shot 8 under and got through with ease. But it was hard. But that's what makes it so rewarding. So, you know, I think for you, being able to prepare as much as you can from a skill set point of view with consequences through different drills, but most importantly, invite and recognize that Q School is a beast and it's a different week and it is what it is, but you're ready and you're prepared, you've got your competencies, you've got your skills, and just it's about being able to control that focus.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a grind, but I still cherish and enjoy doing this because it's, I wouldn't want to do anything else in the world. And I will figure it out. You know, I think that the reason I turned pro was not because I felt that my skill level was, you know, because I knew I had skill, but I felt that my ability to never quit was my biggest weapon against other individuals. Because I, you know, I've played in some events where, you know, I felt, you know, that I might be down and out, and I, you know, dug myself out of that hole within the round. And I think that my mind, while it may not be the most trained mind in the world, when it gets into those more intense situations, it can more often than not pull myself out versus, you know, get bogged down.
Yeah. I think the only other thing that we can sort of discuss when it comes to those Q School type of moments or those Monday qualifier moments is it's very easy for us to step into this, like, I have to mindset, like, this is my only avenue and I have to perform well today and really, I won't say over-dramatize the day or the situation, but it means more even than what it actually even is when it does it. So giving yourself a little bit of flexibility, giving yourself some options like, okay, it would be great to get through on this Monday, but if I don't, I have other chances coming up. And with Q School, if I don't get through, it's okay. I've got other options when it comes to getting status. So I can Monday qualify. And just giving yourself that little bit of flexibility around, you know, possibilities around options and opportunities, I think that just helps to diffuse that stress response to I have to do it this week or I have to do it today. So I don't know whether you've stepped into, you know, unconsciously stepped into some of that I have to mindset.
Absolutely. Yeah. I as soon as you said it, I was like, that's definitely me sometimes. So
yeah. You know, it's So just giving yourself that little bit of flexibility from a timeline point of view that, you know, I would love to do it today. I would love to do it this week. But if not, I have some other pathways I can go that still get me to the same position, the end result. The end result is, you know, Korn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour status in the next year or two. That's the end result. There's a lot of different paths you can take to get there. So just making sure that you have that understanding of flexibility helps to just diffuse that little bit of pressure on the moment, you know, when you're in it.
Jamie, Peter, I was going to ask, you know, Peter, you sort of raised something that resonates for me, not in a golfing sense, but, you know, I'm a father and I've got a young son who's out there trying to make a career and you know, deal with a whole heap of young golfers. And Jamie, as you do coaching a whole heap of young talent, but you mentioned the expectations that your friends, family, partners, loved ones all have and have around you and your performance, you know, all channeling down this funnel of people with this, oh, it's okay, don't worry, or that's great. But whatever the level of expectations are, do you have any challenges, you know, allaying those pressures that come from those expectations, you know, which is totally outside of the golf? And when you turn up to the golf course and drive in the driveway and then ready to go like we're talking about, is there anything there, Jamie, that, you know, permeates from your experience and could potentially help Peter, you know, in those situations?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, any type of pressure from family or friends, it's funny because most of the time it actually isn't coming from them. It's how we carry it. You know, it's how we perceive those conversations around, oh, you've got Q school coming up, oh, good luck, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So, Peter, how do you think you've carried those conversations, you know, with you in the past?
Yeah, I think I would characterize myself as I'm a kind individual. I care a lot about what other people think, which, you know, could be, you know, some people say that might be a downfall. I don't really see it that way because I'm a compassionate person, but I think it weighs on me because I care about those people and I want them to, you know, feel like they, you know, are proud of me if you want to go that way. But I don't know. I think I've gotten better at just kind of like trying to avoid those conversations with, and not with close family, obviously close family, but, you know, people who are, you know, people at the gym or, you know, whoever is interested in my lifestyle, I try to avoid the talk of Q school and talk of Monday qualifiers. I just say, hey, I'm just excited for a great year. And I think honestly, for me, I know that sounds kind of nuts, but, for me, that like just kind of, you know, kind of doing my thing and just, you know, not being, you know, disrespectful to those individuals. But I find that that's kind of the best way for me to just kind of stay in my own little bubble and, you know, just focus on the task at hand for my future.
Yeah. Do you think your, let's say your identity from the position of others, family and friends, how they view you, changes depending upon whether you succeed or fail in Q school?
Absolutely not. I think that's one thing that my parents did such a great job of. They said, you know, we're proud of you no matter what. You know, as long as you're, you know, giving your 100% effort, we're never going to be disappointed in anything you do. As long as you're giving 100% effort. That's my mom and dad would say that to me a lot, which I always loved. I thought that was a great way to kind of think about it because then, you know, I'm still working hard. And, you know, regardless of outcome, doesn't change me as an individual. I just think, you know, for those, you know, exterior individuals outside of close family, you know, everybody has their opinion on, you know, oh, you should maybe do this, or maybe you should do this, and you should see this person, or you should, you know, do that. I think that's something where I've kind of narrowed into my own world and finding what I like the best in terms of training, in terms of, you know, people that I hang out with, in terms of golf, people that I play golf with. That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah. And that's great. I mean, I think, you know, we all have our own little recipe for functioning and for performance. And sometimes that recipe is absolutely spot on, but it may not create the positive outcome in a short period of time. And obviously what golfers are great at is tinkering. And if we don't get the desired outcome in a 3-month period, then I'm going to something needs to be changed. But sometimes that's actually the furthest thing from the truth. We just need to keep, you know, building that foundation brick by brick and just know that I'm going to break through to that positive outcome if I keep doing the right things and just keep building those foundations. So I think that's an important one. So how would you say, let's say carrying the weight of expectation of others, how do you think that has shifted your focus, attention? How do you think that's gotten in the way of your performance in those Q school moments in the past?
It's that feeling of not wanting to let people down. I'm sure lots of people out there have felt that before, right? You know, you're in high school, you fail a big test and you're scared to go to your parents and say, "Hey, I flunked this test." Or, I think it weighs on you in the sense that it's harder to recover and allow little things to not get at you. I think that actually might be the biggest point here. Is that when you have all that weight on top of you, the little things that happen in a golf round that happen in every golf round, they actually kind of, they don't deflect. They kind of get at you, and those little things kind of add up. Yeah. Little mistakes that you might make, mental mistakes, physical mistakes, you know, you allow yourself to get into a negative rut where you're letting it kind of snowball. And it gets to a point where, you know, you that's how you fail, right? Because it doesn't, yeah, like it's like a water, you know, that's where you fail.
Yeah. So here's a good question that the listeners will know about this question from very early episodes. Going into those Q schools, have you allowed yourself the freedom to fail before you tee it up?
Like, have I physically said, if I fail, I'm okay?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I wouldn't think so. I've definitely never said it out loud.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a positive person and I don't think I've ever thought about it that way. Does that make sense? Like, yeah, I would go into a Q school saying, I'm going to qualify.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously when you don't do that and you pumped yourself up this whole week, and it probably just makes it feel worse, which it did. Absolutely. It felt terrible. I drove 13 hours back from Mississippi to South Florida after first stage, and I just felt awful.
Yeah. And this almost goes back to the same conversation we had in the last episode, Roscoe, with Scott about the visualization process, where he's visualizing himself playing perfectly. He's visualizing a perfect outcome. But the reality is that's setting an expectation for self. And when the first step goes wrong, then, you know, how do we handle that? What happens? So it's a very interesting question around that. Have you allowed yourself the freedom to fail? And this is where I'm not a big fan of the words positive and negative thinking. People perceive that the question of have you allowed yourself the freedom to fail is you attaching to a negative outcome. It's not that at all. It's about you accepting the possibility of a negative outcome and you'll be okay with it, but then stepping into committing to greatness, allowing yourself the freedom to fail actually diffuses the fear of failure before you even get out there. Which, when we look at your Q school pattern, you're 75 in the first round, your brain's probably already gone, well, okay, well, I've failed this week, so now I've got the freedom to perform and then you go and play well. Well, if we could start the tournament with that freedom to fail, it's probably going to help create a more positive outcome. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. I wish we had this conversation 5 months ago.
Well, this is the cool thing. It's about... and this can be practiced before every round of golf. Like, okay, I'm allowing myself the freedom to fail, but I'm going to commit to, you know, commit to greatness. I'm going to commit to playing well, commit to executing, controlling my focus, whatever it might be. But, you know, going through that conversation prior to these tournaments, and whether it is the acceptance, you know, of allowing yourself the freedom to fail from an attachment to expectation of others as well. But there's one other thing I want to discuss with you, which when you talked about yourself earlier, about what type of person you are, you mentioned one word, which is like a very powerful word. I don't know if you can remember what word you used, what type of person you are.
Compassionate.
Yeah. How often are you compassionate to yourself when it comes to your golfing performance?
I think when I play well, I'm, you know, obviously when you play well, you don't have to be too compassionate about to yourself. But, you know, when I get into these negative trends, I would tend to not be as compassionate.
Yeah.
Would say.
Yeah. So we've got this beautiful little thing going on here where if you allow yourself the freedom to fail before stepping into competing and obviously commit to playing well, but have it with like a layer of compassion. I'm going to be compassionate to myself today. If things don't go well, I'm going to be compassionate to myself, supportive to myself. I think you're giving yourself the foundation of being able to handle those tougher days a lot better and allow your skills to minimize damage, because that's what a lot of professional golf is. Like if you turn that 75 into a 71 at Q school, you might have given yourself a chance to get through. I don't know how many you missed by in that event.
I think it was a couple. It was like four or five maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, if you do start off that 71 instead of 75, then you're just giving yourself a chance to breathe and continue on. And, I think that and, you know, allowing yourself the freedom to fail and stepping into a little bit of compassion, I think a great little recipe for you moving forward in the Mondays and in Q School this year. So I think there are a couple of really good points to take.
I think that's brilliant. Yeah, I appreciate the advice, because honestly I think that you just hit it nail on the head. You know, we've chatted a little bit in the past, but you know, this is our first full conversation, and I think that was you got to the issue pretty quick, so pretty incredible. But I think you're completely right.
That's awesome, mate. I'm glad we were able to sort of, you know, tap into those things. And when are you, so if we look at your schedule coming up, what's your schedule look like over the next couple of months?
Yeah, so I'm playing some small stuff on the minor league golf tour here for the next 2 weeks. I've got actually a pre-qualifier for the newly named Cognizant Classic down here in West Palm Beach. That's next Thursday. I'll be playing the pre-qualifier, and then the main qualifier is on Monday.
Yeah.
And then I will play an event on the G-Pro Tour at the end of February in Georgia.
Yeah.
And then I will follow that up with those back-to-back events in March in Louisiana on the All-Pro Tour.
Yeah, fabulous. That's great. Well, Roscoe, I think we've got some good schedules coming up for Peter in the next couple of months, and then obviously leading into Q School a bit later in the year. Are you doing the Q School? Is there a Q School for the New Americas Tour?
Yeah, it's for the second half of the season in Canada. Yeah. I think there's something funky going on with the Latin Swing, because I, you know, a buddy of mine, they've already canceled one event. They're planning on canceling another, from what I've heard. Right. So it's gone from 6 events to 4 events in Latin. So they haven't, I don't believe they've released that Q School yet, because I think they promised all these guys 6 starts and they're going to get 4, maybe, depending on, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on down there. So, I'm not sure. I when they release that qualifier, I will play it. Because I think that's, you know, I think it's a good stepping stone for me, and I think I've gotten my feet under me, and now with this mental mastery, I should be able to go out and not shoot 76 in the first round.
Love that, mate. No, that's good. Well, there's some good schedule there for us to keep an eye out, Roscoe, for Peter this year, and Yeah, I really appreciate you jumping on and being a part of this. And I think the listeners are going to, you know, get a lot out of it, especially those young guys that are sort of either wanting to move towards being a pro or have just turned pro and they're sort of, you know, hitting up some Q schools coming up. So, yeah, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. This was a blast. Really enjoyed it.
Okay, there you have it. Peter Bradbeer, you've just got his schedule there. Jump online, you can follow him. Peter, can we follow you socially? Where do you have a social handle?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where do we find you? Just give yourself a shout out.
My Instagram handle is Peter Bradbeer Golf. I have a couple followers. Please give me a follow. I try and post, but I'm going to be honest, I'm pretty terrible at it. And if anybody, you know, wants to know a more complex schedule, I'm happy to share that with them as well. If they want to follow along, I would greatly appreciate that. So yeah, please give me a follow. That'd be awesome.
Well, we'll try and help you out there, but it's been great to chat and thank you for, you know, unpacking a couple of those, you know, really key scenarios that you went through there with Jamie. And, you know, I can only say that from listening to conversations like this, how much I've benefited in my own golf. I won't bother you with some of my own scenarios, but I know I've played 3 games of recently and everything that you talked about there impacted me one way or other to the positive. And everyone who's listening to this probably knows where it was in the past. So some great stuff there. Jamie, thanks for jumping on and giving some help and support to Peter as he progresses through the next part of his career and schedule. It's been great to catch up again. And I guess we'll keep doing it. We'll keep talking about it in the Let's Talk About It series, Jamie.
Yeah, I love it, Roscoe. And, look, I think also club-level golfers can resonate with a lot of the discussion that Peter and I had today just by, you know, your club championship events when that rolls around. That's like Q school for, you know, for professional golfers and monthly medals, you know, that one event each month that means something more. Like, you know, you can resonate with that and also, you know, apply some of these strategies to the club-level game. So, no, appreciate it. And again, you know, the Let's Talk About It format is, I think it's going to be a really powerful one moving forward to connect with a lot of golfers. So appreciate your time, Roscoe. And Peter, again, appreciate you jumping on board and look forward to sharing this episode with everyone.
Beautiful. That's it. Let's Talk About It. Episode 2, Season 1 in the can. We'll see you next time on Let's Talk About It with the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast. Until then, enjoy your golf.